All right, so today is September 25th, 2015. This is a follow-up interview with William Steffenhagen. He was interviewed several years ago about academic staff governance. My name is Troy Reeves with the UW-Mass Oral History Program. So, Bill, if you wouldn't mind first saying your name and spelling your last name so I can kind of see the sound.
William.
Quality.
Steffenhagen. It's Steffenhagen.
Amy, would you mind saying your name just so I can see how you're picked up?
Amy Redemel.
Okay. So Amy and I might have to project a little bit to make sure we get our questions heard. So, Bill, thanks for agreeing to this follow-up interview. This is on your first interview, but I think it probably wouldn't hurt to have a bit of recap. And so it's the same question I asked you at the Institute, and that's sort of how you found out that there actually was something called academic staff.
I was in the department and hadn't paid a whole lot of attention to governance because I think it recently came into being. And at that time, they were formulating the assembly. They were formulating different committees. And then they came to a point where the first academic staff executive committee was to be elected. Paul Jelly was an assistant dean in CALS, called me. He was on the nominating committee and asked if I'd be willing to have my name on the ballot for ASEC. And I said, okay. But nobody knew me. I was a unknown. And so they had the election. It's selected by academic staff at large on the campus. I was not elected. Then the nominating committee was looking to fill the assembly committees, personal policy procedures, CEBC, well, compensation, economic benefits, etc. And Paul asked me if I'd be interested in one of those two committees. And I told him I didn't think the Economic Benefits Committee probably would be able to accomplish a whole lot, but I felt that the Personal Policy and Procedures Committee could really make a difference. So I asked to be nominated for that one and then was elected by the Assembly. So.
And at that point, you were working for Vet Science?
Yes.
Okay. Were you, because I know you're a research specialist there, do you recall actually what your title was at that point?
If governance was 85, 87, wasn't it?
Yes.
At that point, I was assistant to the chairperson in the Department of Veterinary Science. I coordinated the department office,
okay.
Glassware kitchen, experimental farms, and various those entities.
Okay. So part of this, as I said in the email, is to talk a little bit more about your time in academic staff governance, but also talk a little bit about your work that you did here on campus. So you just provide an overview there a little bit about being the job that you had. At some point you became assistant dean at CALS?
Yes, that was there. Neil Jorgensen was the acting dean at the time. And he basically told me he'd like me to apply for the assistant dean for research. So I did. I was selected for that position. The associate dean for research had just accepted a job as a dean at Cornell, I think, the dean of agriculture at Cornell. And so a new associate dean came in, and there was and of course that person didn't select me, so. But I was there for 5 years, and I really enjoyed it because one of the things I enjoyed working in the department was assisting faculty and staff, writing, I wouldn't assist with writing research grants, but making sure that the office got everything taken care of and out the door and through the system to meet the deadline. And I enjoyed that sort of stuff. So that was the kind of stuff I was doing at the college level for the whole college, getting the research proposals through, signed off. If there was human subjects or animal care protocols, make sure that stuff gets done. And I really enjoyed it because it was assisting the faculty and the staff, for that matter, for continuing their research. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, a lot of academic staff depend on the research grants, soft money. And if the research grant isn't renewed or there's a drop, then, you know, it's an issue.
Right. So was that a big change from what you were doing at VetMed?
Veterinary science? Well, in veterinary science, I was an administrative, quote-unquote, jack-of-all-trades. Took care of the experimental farms. Worked with Glenn Moon. He was the farm supervisor. If he had any issues, I'd work with him on those. We had I don't remember how many classified staff we had on the farm. I think it was about 11 to 13. It was all animal care unit type stuff. Then we had Reeder and Google Farm. That was on Mineral Point. Reeder was where the ponies always were, on the corner of Mineral Point and Whitney. On the south side, kitty corner, well, it was Reeder, where the research park area is, mm-hmm. up on the hill. And then on the across the street was Google Farm, which was eventually developed into a subdivision. We lost those two farms, and they gave us Bookout Farm at Arlington to replace the space we had there. And then at Bookout Farm was basically a semi-run-down place. And the dean gave us about, I think it was $25,000. Doesn't seem like much, but back then, we built a service building. I worked with a carpenter crew up there, and we staffed the building. Got an autoclave, and they could do surgeries up there, and it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Kind of fun.
So when you first mentioned the farm, was that the farm here on campus? I mean, you just talked about a couple of Mineral Point, but you also said you were talking about...
Charmony Farm was also our farm.
Okay.
The one that's right across from CUNA.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's also was developed in the research park, basically, except for the animal unit side. And then the School of Vet Med, when they put their facility right next to ours. And then, of course, eventually over time, veterinary science was responsible for the master's and the PhD degree. When the School of Vet Med came on board, we gave, I forget what the name of the appointment was. It was an appointment to faculty in the School of Veterinary Medicine so they could participate in our graduate program.
Okay.
I don't remember what the technology term was.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know how long ago it was. I wasn't there at the time, so it had to be after I left. They decided to integrate veterinary science department into the School of Veterinary Medicine and basically dissolve the department assign the faculty into their four departments where they fit. And they still kept the space over here that's still vet school space or wherever it is. and then the master's and PhD program was taken over by School of Vet Med Comparative Biosciences Department. And I have to admit, I'm impressed because when I... it's a highly rated program, so they haven't let it diminish or sink any. They've kept it at a very strong level, and I think actually they've built itself up a little bit too. So it's gut-wrenching as the transformation was, because when you get rid of a department, and it was gut-wrenching. We even I think we lost a couple of faculty that just left because of it. But it's turned out the school, I think, is stronger because of it, and the program is continuing at a high level of scholar activity. Mm-hmm. So I guess it turned out well.
So when you were at then veterinary science, mm-hmm. I mean, you just talked about some of the things you did, including basically project manage the development of a new farm. Mm-hmm. How did you balance your work and then being involved in academic staff stuff?
I had an extraordinary office staff. When I first started, the department secretary was in charge of the office. And I was just sort of, well, I was feeling my way along because assistant to the chair position was brand new. Only Judy Peterson in bacteriology had that. So our dean, well, it's not dean, but he was department chair Easterday, wanted to have an assistant at the chair. And basically what he wanted is he kept his lab going. He did teaching, research, all of the stuff the faculty do. And he was also chair. But he wanted to have somebody who could take care of the day-to-day administrative stuff. And he would man his lab, keep his instruction going, and then take care of the quote-unquote chair-dean stuff. And it worked out well. As a matter of fact, I think in my last interview I said about 6 or 7 chairs, because that was the attitude of the faculty in veterinary science. They took the chair as an obligation to do their service period, but they always kept the lab going, they always did the research, and they kept it going. So they took care of faculty business. So it worked out well.
It sounds like balancing. You said you had a good staff.
Oh yeah, the office staff was excellent. Like backing up to where, see, I kind of switched gears again. And that's where my mind works. So just be aware of that. It was a interesting times. But once the department secretary, she left to, I assume, take another position somewhere. And at that point, I think I became in charge of the office, and this new department secretary worked. I was in charge of her. And then we had a turnover of staff over time, and I always hired people I felt would do a good job and could work independently. I really didn't care how they did their job as long as they got it done and etc. And that worked out. By the time I left, we had a staff there that had been together for about 10 years. And after I left, they stayed together another 6 years and before all of this turmoil happened. So it was a good crew. And quite frankly, they could take care of everything. And so, obviously, other academic staff don't have that luxury, but I did. And interesting part was when I was involved in governance, it was Bruce Christensen. He was chair at the time. He did research. His lab did research on mosquitoes and I think it was malaria. And he came in one day and he sat down and he says, "Hey, Bill, I know you're involved in academic staff, governance stuff, but you have a job here, too." So, yeah, they were always some friendly reminders. Mm. But it was always a very positive thing, and yeah, but rebalanced and got things in order. So,
I'm always interested in people who know or knew, people who streets on this campus are named after, and Easterday has a lane named after him back over here. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you could maybe talk a bit more specifically about, you know, interactions you had.
Well, Barney Easterday, like I said, he was the person who created the position. The way he looked to hire someone, he just pulled all the personnel files, reviewed them. I was then working as, I think, a graduate student or a research specialist, I don't know which, was in Ollie Ginther's lab. He did horse reproduction research. And I was sitting at my desk, and I was doing a graph, and it wasn't on the computer because that didn't exist. I was using those press letter things where you press them on and making graphs and charts. I mean, that's where we were at that time. And Barney Easterday walks in. Of course, when the chair walks in, you're the only person in the room. You just kind of wonder what's going to happen. And he pulled up a chair and he sat down. And he said, "Bill, I'm creating a new position, assistant to the chair. Gave me a brief synopsis of what it would do. And he says, I looked through all the personnel files for all the staff in the department, and he says, I think you're the most qualified. Well, that was just kind of floored. He says, would you be interested? And I says, well, let me talk to my wife. And it wasn't a hard decision to make because I was on soft grant money, and this was a state-funded position, which back then was hard. Today, I realize they're not as hard as they used to be. But he went down and talked to, after I said yes, he went down to talk to Ollie Ginther. And Ollie Ginther said, you can't take Bill. You can't take him out of my lab. You blah, 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 blah. And Barney Easterday told me, he says, after I talked to Ollie, that was the best recommendation he could ever have given me. But I was in the right place at the right time. Actually, for both of my, for the assistant dean, I think I did a good job in both positions, but I was just at the right place at the right time, and I think a lot of that is what happens. So,
you've alluded to this in some of the answers, but I always like to ask directly. So now we're talking about, you know, assistant to the chair, this position in vet science. What were some of the things you could do or did do in a typical day?
It depended. I would always, every day, I like to walk around the department. And I always had my coffee cup, and that was me, my trusty coffee cup. Whether it was warm, cold, or whatever, it didn't make any difference. And then I enjoyed stopping in. There was a couple of faculty members that I really had a good rapport with. And so if they were sitting in their office, I'd say hi, and I'd walk in. And we just sat down and chat for maybe 15 minutes, get up. There were other faculty I didn't have that relationship with. But it was fun working with the faculty. And, of course, in faculty being faculty, their area is by far the most important area in the department. And so there was kind of a little feedback, but they always got along, respected each other. And it was a very productive group of folks. And then I'd try to get out to the experimental farms at least once or twice a week. If we were having projects to have a building painted or some remodeling work to bring something up to code standards and that sort of thing, I usually took care of that. When we, under Cal's, they sent 80% of overhead back to departments, and since our grant production was good, we would generally get between about $80,000 come back in the form of, then we'd use that to buy equipment, to improve equipment in the laboratories to keep enhancing the research area. Some of it would go into animal caging and whatever needed to be done to keep the research on cutting edge, at least in that time frame. I think I just lost my train of thought.
So, typical day, we talked about chatting with faculty or going out to the farms. What other things might occur?
If anything went wrong, if any equipment malfunctioned, we got it taken care of. I worked with the building maintenance man because we had at that time we had an in-building air conditioner. that on a hot, steamy day wasn't the most efficient. That was that. I think, and I was involved with campus activities, so I'd go tooling off and doing stuff that way. Mm-hmm. But I always kept the base touched at home, so to say.
What building? We pointed a couple times, which you know we can't pick up in it.
No,
can't pick up in an oral history interview. But so Linden is this. So here's Linden, and then behind us is Russell Labs, and then Babcock Hall. What building was your department in? A little farther down on.
It's the building that faces Linden. Linden Drive, in front of that's. With Animal Science Building is right behind it, the parking lot. So you got your Animal Science Building, you've got Lot 36, and this was the Veterinary Science Building. I think it's called the Robert Hansen Hall now. Mm-hmm. Dr. Hansen, he was a virologist in the department who passed away.
Well, let's switch now and ask. I'd like to ask a couple of questions about your move to CALS. And first off, I assume it was a physical move. So where did your office end up once you got the job for CALS?
136 Ag Hall. That was research division area. It had a financial accountant that did the hatch formula funds. Then it had two staff people to process grants. It had an associate dean, and then I was assistant dean.
Okay.
It was a pretty small operation.
So you didn't have the staff under you as you did in vet science? Okay.
No, but by that time, I think the yeoman's work had been done, and we just, I think at that time, I was just a member, was a member of ASEC. So I'd go to ASEC meetings once a week and maybe some other stuff.
Okay.
I was involved in the search and screen committee when we selected the secretary of the academic staff. Trying to remember her name now. It's the one before the last one.
Colleen?
Yeah, Colleen McCabe. And then I had also worked with Steve Myra. He was in that position prior to that.
What do you recall about that search and screen process? Anything that stands out?
Yeah, basically that took place in my office. It was a small group. There was a couple of members. Well, some members of ACE, maybe a standing committee chair or two. And then I don't know if we conducted the interviews there, but that's where we did all our deliberations. I don't think there was a lot of candidates. We had it kind of narrowed down by the time we actually conducted an interview.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And even though you didn't have, you said, you know, you didn't, the heavy lifting was done by the time you were in this job. I assume, though, your supervisor was amenable to you doing this sort of academic staff related activity.
I'm not so sure. Less amenable than my previous supervisors, so let's put it that way.
So I wanted to step, not necessarily step back here, but sort of shift a little bit. I know one of the things that was mentioned in this first interview that I don't know if Valley did the interview. I thought it was Kathy, but it was Valley who did the interview. Valley Warren was about ASPRO.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we went into a lot of detail about your work in ASPRO. So first, because we don't know who's going to listen to this and what sort of context, first off, what is ASPRO?
Academic Staff Public Representation Organization. And then I think we added professionals in there once. Academic Staff. We changed the public to professional representation organization. That was later in the... and it was fashioned after... what's the faculty version? profs. Yes. It was fashioned after profs. That was created by the Academic Staff Assembly, and it basically was in response. We realized that a lot of the activity, a lot of what affects academic staff, be it pay, even job security, was happening at the other end of State Street, and we had no voice in it at all. And when I think it was the original ASEC crew. Phil Helmuth was chair, and there was another gentleman. Maybe his name will come up. And they realized they needed to have a voice downtown. And that's when ASPRO was created. And it was created as an organization that had membership, dues, and I think what happened, there was an effort to separate faculty compensation from academic staff compensation at the other end of State Street. And the academic staff went ballistic. And a lot of people joined. I mean, it was... And the leaders and shakers of academic staff governance started it, and virtually a lot of folks joined. And they were able to quell that separation, keep us together. And that basically was the start of it, and that was what ASPRO had done for following years, too, because there was always we need to give the faculty more, so we'll just separate them in the pay packages, and ASPRO was able to stop all of that stuff. Of course, now everything's changed, so it's a different ballgame. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and we had a good rapport. Our lobbyist, Janet Swamby, and Kathy Kilgore, I think it's Swamby Kilgore Associates. I think they're still in business. And when the budget was under consideration by the Joint Finance Committee, and they had their meetings around the state, we tried to get at least one academic staff to testify at those meetings, just to get it out there. And then we would make it a point where the lobbyist and the president would meet with every member of Joint Finance Committee, so they knew who we were as they were making decisions. And I think we had a pretty good rapport with the folks. Obviously, they made the decision based on politics, but we kept the faculty and academic staff pay plan together. So,
were you actively involved in ASPRO throughout mm-hmm. your time here? Or was there times where you were more involved?
I'd have to look at... I was a board member for, I think, a number of years. We met, once a month. And then when the legislature was out of cycle, we didn't meet that much. I'm sorry if I'm all of your time, but and then maybe I just look it up so I at least get it half right here. Sorry for the dead pause.
Well, the nice thing about digital technology, we can just
delete that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was a member, or at least on, I think, the board, 1998. Well, member 1998 to 2008, and then I was asked for president from August 2004 to December 2008.
So towards the end of your
yeah.
career,
yeah.
the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we did is early on, when ASPRA was formed, there were academic staff at UW-Milwaukee that wanted to have a voice, but they didn't have the numbers to support an organization. So they asked if they could join with us. And so we met them halfway between Milwaukee and whatever, and we had a nice conversation, and they joined on. And so we had a fair number of activists, academic staff members from UWM, or Milwaukee. And as the organization, when the legislature changed from Democratic control, where Dane County has a large influence, to Republican control, we realized that the Dane County delegation of Democrats has no influence on the process. And that's when we expanded, and that we brought up legislation to the Assembly to make it the UW system ASPRO. Maybe that's when we changed it to a professional, so I don't remember. And so we made a concerted effort to meet with the campus governance groups. Sometimes it would be an offsite to UW system academic staff reps, or we'd go to the campus. And we were able to pick up some membership on quite a few of the campuses, so that when, say, an out-state legislator, probably more likely a Republican, since those are the people that were doing the controlling things, was in one of their districts, we would have the academic staff there contact them and at least put a face on our issue. Because let's face it, legislators turn over. I mean, they turn over a lot. Every election cycle, there's like, I don't know, 20, 25, 30 new members. And it's a continual education process because they don't know who we are. They know the faculty, they know the students, and they know the staff who keep the place going, the steam fitters, the plumbers, and people who mow the lawn, but this amorphous group that's in the middle that does everything else, it's hard to describe us. And so we would always say we're the professionals who work hand-in-hand with the faculty in classroom instruction, in research, and keep those enterprises going. Obviously, we do a lot of others. Oh, we advise students. We tried to pick those things that would mean something to legislators, or if they have kids, mean something. So that's the way we approached it. But it was fun. I enjoyed that too.
Amy, since we're on sort of academic staff governance stuff, is there questions that either you came across or things you've heard that you want to follow up on? I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm getting ready to move to another subject. So
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. So you said then after, I think you said 5 years at Cal's, somebody came on and really, for lack of a better word, didn't really want you to work there?
That was the person who came on at the same time I came on, but didn't hire me.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay.
And I guess the nice way of saying 5 years later, they said thank you.
So when did you go from, assistant dean to your last title, I think, was program manager for data science?
Yeah, outreach program manager.
So can you describe why that shift happened, so why you moved from Cal's to there?
Well, an assistant dean is what do they call those positions?
It's limited.
Yeah, it isn't quote-unquote a limited academic staff position. It has the rights of civil service, you know, but as far you serve at the pleasure of. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you one day your boss, he can just say you're done. And so at that point, but the one I was The one smart thing I did, well, at least one thing, I had an indefinite appointment in veterinary science, and when they wanted me to come up as an assistant dean, I realized that was a at-will position with no job security, and I told, I think it was Associate Dean Frank Kooster at the time, I said I'd accept the position on the condition that I can keep my indefinite appointment, because they wanted to take that away. And they finally said, yes, you can. And once they said that, so when I was removed from the limited position, I had the indefinite and basically I worked, and the hard part was after this event happened, I worked for the same person up in Ag Hall on their effort to get accreditation for the animal care units, and I had to report to that person once a week. And finally, they found a position down in dairy science, basically doing what I did before I went up there. I was a department administrator, and that was under the department chair was Armentano, and he had gone up to the dean and talked to the dean about it, and I became the department chair down there, not department, the administrator down there until I retired. But after that event, I kept a spreadsheet of ETF retirement, Social Security anticipation, and I was also in the National Guard for close to 30 years. There was a little retirement there, and I just had a spreadsheet going, and when all the numbers meshed, I said, thank you, it's been fun working here. So, but yeah, no, I have no regrets because there was that one negative experience, but as far as the university as a whole working, and I think one of the interesting things about being a department person, especially in dairy science, was working with all of the young people that would come from South America, Central America, and do on H-1B, or I don't know what visa that was anymore. Mm-hmm. And they'd come up for stints from anywhere from 3 months to 6 months. And I met a lot of folks, and it was just fun working with those folks as well. So there'd been a lot of positive things.
What were, if there were differences between, you said you basically did the same job at veterinary science, then you had this job at Cal's, and then you came back to dairy science.
Well, the job at dairy science was pretty much restricted to administrating the department office.
Okay.
Because they had other academic staff in charge of mm-hmm. various other areas.
So one of the differences then would be you didn't get to go out to the farms and do outreach and things like that that you did do for vet science.
No, not much. Not much.
Okay. And then it was during this time at dairy science that you were involved in ASPRO. Does that run somewhat concurrently?
It has to, because if the dates are ready.
Right. So what support, if any, were you getting from your supervisor then to be involved in academic staff stuff when you were at dairy science?
He didn't give me any issues. It's probably because of my responsibilities, I didn't have a whole lot to do, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. So I could spend some time doing something else and nothing fell through the crack. Because my responsibility was a lot smaller at that point.
Okay. Valley may have asked this, although I don't think she did. What would you say, what would you like to be remembered for helping to do on this campus?
I think writing academic staff policies and procedures, that's by far the big item. I was on the, as I mentioned, Paul Jelly asked if I had what committee, and that's the one I chose. We met for close to 6 years, writing academic staff policy and procedures. And it's, I think it's now 14 chapters. I think then it was 11, 12. But when you stop to think of it, there's a chapter on definitions. There's a chapter on appointment types, appointments, grievance, dismissal for cause, and I don't remember everything else. But when you're doing a writing a personnel manual, and we had a nice diverse group, I think it was nine people, and they were all activists at the time because they were part of that group of folks that helped get governance going, and they wanted to see it succeed. And then Steve Lund would join us, and he had experienced problems in the personnel system. So from his administrative point of view, he wanted to see some changes too and thought this was an excellent time to make some positive changes from their perspective. And we worked together over that period. Ann Wallace, I believe, chaired the committee from the beginning for 4 years until she got a new dean. I don't know if it was Traber or who it was, who frowned on academic staff being involved in committee service. And so she was still involved on the committee, but stepped back from being chair. And then I was selected by the group to chair it for the last 2 years. And my commitment to the group was, because we had done a lot of the preliminary work on the ASPP, acronyms, and I says, my commitment to you is we're going to get this thing out the door. And we got it out the door. The final phase of that endeavor was it would have to go to the Board of Regents. They don't have to prove it, but at least it has to be run by them. And, of course, the administration had to agree. But since Steve Lund was involved the whole time, administrative sign-off was more or less a given. And then when it came to UW System, Ann and I was chairing at the time, and I always had Ann Wallace there because she was chair before, involved, and we met with John Tallman, who was the senior legal counsel for UW System. And we'd ask him, go through this thing, see if there's anything that conflicts with UWS, UW System rules. And then I asked him one thing, and this was the thing that was really, and I mentioned this at that academic staff, whatever it was. This is the thing that was really hanging on academic staff, and this was the annual letter of reappointment. And people agonized over that puppy. You know, am I going to have a job come July 1st? Or if they didn't get a letter July 1st, and some people didn't get it until a month later. And they just, I mean, you can imagine. And so I asked John Tallman, I says, is there anything in UWS that says we have to do a letter of reappointment every year? And he researched it and he said, no. All it requires is a letter of appointment. And from that conversation, we changed it from reappointing folks every year to a system of being able to say, you have an appointment until you're notified to the contrary. And once we did that, then we could put some notice periods on the notified of the contrary. And we completely changed the system. So the anxiety that academic staff had about this annual reappointment letter, all that anxiety basically went away. That, I think, is probably the major accomplishment that I'm most proud of.
I have one more thing, and that's, I know things have changed since you retired in 2008, but just in general, if somebody came to you and said they were interested in becoming involved in academic staff governance, what would you say to them?
Well, I'd encourage them within the limitations of the job they have. Some people, quite frankly, they can't. Some faculty and research labs, I mean, they keep an eye on folks, and you got to be at the bunch all the time. One thing I did notice, I was an administrative type. By definition, you do have some time to do some of those things. And some of the administrative types that I bumped into kind of would have their agenda in mind. When I was on Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee, and my whole agenda was to put myself not in what would benefit me as an administrator, make it easy to hire, fire, or whatever. I always put myself in the position of the academic staff at the lab bench and basically ask myself, are we doing the right thing by them? And that was the whole philosophy as we went through, I don't know if the rest of the folks knew that, but the whole philosophy, when we were getting it out the door, when I was chairing it, I was a scribe. And I was a scribe before that. And basically, everything in the discussion, I'd take back, I'd make some adjustments in the language, and I always try to keep in mind where we were and what we did, and bring it back as a committee. We had a scribe previous to that, good person, just a little, but we'd have the committee discussion. Person would go home, and somehow their personal bias always got in the language, so we had to revisit. Mm-hmm. So, that's natural, but yeah. So I know I didn't look at how can I make my administrative job easier. I wanted to make sure the person in the lab bench or a person who's doing an academic staff job anywhere, when they read these rules, could they understand what they were saying, what they were reading? We wanted to make it absolutely clear, so they wouldn't have to go to somebody else and say, "What does this mean?" So,
Amy, is there anything?
I had a couple of things I'm kind of curious about. One, when you were in CALS and things got difficult, what was there any support in the system for you?
My indefinite appointment.
Okay.
Otherwise, I would have been out the door.
And in terms of, like, right today, I think about the Ombuds Office, there's a personnel office you can go to for support, any of that.
I think I
play a role.
I assume the Ombuds was there, but no.
They wouldn't have.
I don't think they. They can do some positive things, but in this situation, I think the handle I had was the indefinite appointment. Mm-hmm. If I would have given that up going up to the dean's office, I'd have had a shorter tenure here.
And was that there because of the policies and procedures that you would help develop, that indefinite mm-hmm. appointment?
As a matter of fact, I didn't even ask for it. One of the department chairs that I had, he says, "Bill, I think we should put you up for an indefinite appointment." And I hadn't even thought about it, but they did. The dean signed off on it. It went through. But I never regretted it. I mean, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. I don't even know what they do now, because the personnel system is so changed, I have no clue what's going on anymore.
Yeah, and I don't know if you'll have any insight on this or not, but when you were talking about the role of ASPRO in keeping the faculty and academic staff pay plan together, mm-hmm. which has been for a long time working on that, I'm thinking about the reorganization of HR and the flexibilities that the university has for pay and all of that, and wondering if the attention is going to need to be shifted now more internally to keep those pay plans together rather than on the legislature.
Well, now that I don't know how much of Chapter 36 is left anymore, but now tenure considerations in the hands of the regents,
mm-hmm.
governance considerations in the hands of the regents? Since we have a Republican legislature, sure, my gut would tell me they don't want to get in the fine-tuning. It's the pay plan's the pay plan. Now, I don't know, do the regents control the pay plan now, or does that still come from the state?
Yes, that's, I don't...
I'm not sure.
I don't know what the new HR system...
Well, they didn't get the autonomies they wanted. They got the cut, but not the autonomies. Except for the change in Chapter 36. So I think the pay plan probably still starts at...
I don't think so, because we actually do have merit pay available to us now. That I know.
Oh, okay.
I think there was some flexibilities we got.
Yes.
Okay.
It was delayed.
Yeah.
But given. So I'm just thinking now that it might shift from an ASPRO kind of organization having to watch that to governance having to watch that, probably.
I think you're probably right.
Well, if somehow the money has got to get it from the state to the university, so there's a step there, and whether that's the Joint Committee on Employment Relations or whatever. I would keep an eye on that to make sure what comes down doesn't have lesser for one group and more for another.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you got, once it gets down here, I think the Board of Regents can basically end the pressure on faculty salaries. It's been intense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need to meet with the Board of Regents and make sure that they understand who you are, what you do, and... So they don't take the initiative to give a little more to the faculty and a little less to the academic staff. The campus, I think, has been pretty good. The governance is close enough on the campus that I think you can control that puppy, probably. But there was even, when I was on ASEC and we met with the university committee, the university committee at that time, I'm just trying to... they said there was a discussion in the university committee to recommend more for the faculty and less for the academic staff, but they backed off that proposal. So,
I have one more thing I thought of. I think I had it written in the email. It just dawned on me. The idea of mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic question is, how much, if any, involvement did you have in any type of mentoring program with the academic staff?
I don't think I was mentored, but I think I was involved in the program. Amy was one of mine.
Right.
She can attest if I'm any good or not. And I think I had two others.
Okay.
And basically, I would just get together with them and find out what they had an interest in, just tried to help them out in that regard. I didn't have any formal, I'm going to teach you this today, but and it works out well. I'm trying to remember how it got started, because I wasn't involved in getting it started. But
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you become involved because you felt obligated, or did you become involved because you felt it was important to mentor?
I think it was having lunch with some friends, and they said, Bill, you should be a mentor. And I says, oh, well, what is it involved? And then I think they took it from there, because a couple of people I knew were on the quote-unquote mentoring committee.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they try to do is, based on what an academic staff member said they'd like to have or find out about or wanted to be mentored with, then they'd look at the academic staff who were involved in governance and the various things, and then they'd try to find somebody who would match that need. And there were a couple of times where they thought Bill would be a pretty good one for this one. Mm-hmm. So that was how that worked out.
Okay.
And you did that kind of later in toward the end of your career, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, do you have anything else you want to say? Feel like you need to say?
Quite honestly, I think I said enough.
So this concludes the interview with William Bill Steffenhagen. So, Bill, thank you for your time.
You're more than welcome.